People are actually losing their homes and asking to rent in our apartments.
The biggest obstacle is, of course, lack of funds.
We think we've helped 58,000 people.
We're constantly having a greater demand for affordable housing.
Welcome to the Affordable Housing Podcast, brought to you by Eden Housing.
The world has gone digital, and like everything else, access to digital technology and adoption isn't as accessible in low-income communities. Today, Eden Housing presents a special edition of the Affordable Housing Podcast, a live panel discussion on critical efforts and bold successes in bridging the digital divide. I'm your moderator, Joanne Green, and our guest experts today are Luis Arteaga, Director of Emerging Markets for California Emerging Technology Fund, also known as CETF, and that's what we'll be calling it today. Rochelle Chong, Regional Vice President of Government Affairs for Comcast's California region. And Linda Mandolini, President of Eden Housing, one of California's oldest and most respected nonprofit affordable housing developers. Welcome, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Before we begin, I'd like to set the stage a bit more fully. Comcast supports digital literacy through a range of different programs, technology labs, online job search training, online safety, and other programs. In national partnership with One Economy, the Comcast Digital Connectors program helps train teens and young adults to use broadband and digital tools and to help prepare for potential careers in media, as has been proven at Eden Housing's many Digital Connectors programs, 21 at this point. These young people then spread digital literacy throughout their neighborhoods. CETF, California Emerging Technology Fund, is a nonprofit foundation that was formed when the PUC, the Public Utilities Commission, approved the mergers of SBC and AT&T. Boy, this sounds like alphabet soup, doesn't it? As well as Verizon and MCI. The point was and is to accelerate the adoption of broadband technology to unserved and underserved populations. As you can see, there's a place for everyone at this table, for CETF, for Comcast, and for Eden Housing. So a word of introduction first for Luis Arteaga, once again, Director of Emerging Markets for CETF. These include underserved urban markets and Native American communities throughout California. Now, prior to this position, Luis was Executive Director of the Public Policy and Advocacy Institute Latino Issues Forum. He has a master's from the John F. Kennedy School of Government at Harvard University and an undergraduate degree from Princeton. Welcome, Luis.
Thank you.
Can you tell us, for openers, a little bit about the digital divide? What does that term mean?
Sure, and thank you for having me this morning. The digital divide, as we refer it, is those who have access to technology, both computer technology, but also increasingly that technology is pretty useless unless it's connected to a broadband connection. So the mission of CETF is to make sure that every house in California has both access to the broadband technology. We know that there's major areas of the state that you cannot get it, even if you want it. And on the other side of that is to make sure that areas that have it, the communities know the value of it and bring the technology home, both the computer as well as the broadband access.
While it may seem obvious, certainly to us and to many people listening, tell us why it's important to bring technology to low-income communities.
Sure, and just by way of background, as I think most people know, California is a computer state, is the leader in technology, but not too long ago, just in 2008, just over half of the households in California had a broadband connection. So just 55% of households had the connection. And over time, what we're seeing is that California is now leading the nation in broadband access at home. And what we're proud of is really that the message has gone out about the way that broadband technology and computer technology is transforming communities, it's transforming lives. You cannot, for example, get a job unless, you go online now. There's educational applications, for example, checking your child's grades or communicating with your teacher is all done online. Health information, you name it, it's all gone digital. And so if you imagine being on the opposite side of the digital divide, if you did not have that access, if you had to still stand in line at the DMV, the amount of lost time and lost money that you would have if you're not connected. So it really is increasingly an imperative both for educational advancement, health advancement, health improvements, but also just employment and well-being. So it's increasingly important, and we know that every year more and more content and applications are going online. So the sooner we can get communities and everybody online, the better we're all going to be.
Well, it sounds like without that access to broadband technology, low-income communities will remain low-income communities.
Correct. And especially in the area of education and employment, we know that that's, you know, it's life or death, really. You know, you're going to continue to be fall behind unless you have access to the latest information, technology, but also the resources that are online. If you're online, you have really access to the world's libraries. And if you don't, you have access to the neighborhood library that has reduced hours and has limited access to laptops or broadband access. And so, you know, you can imagine that the educational divide is really going to worsen unless we can narrow the digital divide.
Right. It's really necessity. Now, we'll be coming back to you soon, but I want to introduce Rochelle Chong, Comcast's Regional Vice President of Government Affairs for the California region. Rochelle has the honor of being the first Asian American to serve as FCC Commissioner. Congratulations on that one.
Thank you. I was very proud of it.
Appointed in 1994 by President Clinton. And you were also the first Asian American commissioner on California's PUC, appointed by Governor Schwarzenegger in 2006. So prior to and between those posts, Rochelle has practiced telecommunications and broadcast regulatory law. And as part of her current position, she oversees an initiative called Internet Essentials, which provides low-income families with a chance to receive deeply discounted internet services, as well as a low-cost computer and free digital literacy training. So, Rochelle, tell us about this program and how it works.
Well, Luis did a great job in teeing it up for me. Comcast saw that there was a problem with adoption issues, and we wanted to help because we are concerned about particularly low-income families whose children are not able to do their homework because they may not have access to the school's computer lab or the library where there's a computer lab in order to do their homework. And so as part of a merger agreement that we had in January of 2011 to purchase NBC Universal, Comcast pledged a three-year program called Internet Essentials. And what we've done is we've offered to low-income families who have at least one child on either the free or reduced school lunch program the ability to have internet access at home for $9.95 a month. And what's important about that rate is there's no modem fee, there's no installation fee, there's no term contract, and there's no credit check to obtain that subscription. The second thing that we've offered these families is the ability to purchase a laptop computer for $150 plus tax. Comcast is subsidizing the purchase of those computers through computer manufacturing companies that we have partnered with. And the final thing Comcast offers eligible families is the ability for digital literacy training. Even though we're not an expert on it, we are helping the families learn basic internet skills. And so we do it either through print materials, an online program, and in-person trainings. So, for example, this fall and winter, we'll be offering free live computer trainings in 25 locations throughout our service area in Northern California. So that's our program. We're offering it for 3 years. We're about a year into the program. Well, I have an answer to that. If you are an eligible family that enrolls in the three-year program, which started in June of 2011, as long as you have a child in the free or reduced lunch program, you can maintain the $9.95 internet rate until the last child graduates from high school. And we have pledged not to raise the $9.95 rate throughout the entire term of the program.
You must have a very large budget to be able to do all of this.
Well, there's no cap to the budget. I just want to assure you, anyone who is eligible may get this rate. And there's no cap. And there's no gimmicks. We really want to help, particularly these families with children, to make sure those kids have the best chance they have to get to college.
It's a great title for the program because, in fact, really we're not talking about a luxury anymore. We are talking about an essential, essentially a utility, right? We absolutely need to have this access. How is Internet Essentials funded, Rochelle?
Well, it's offered as a regular product of Comcast, like any other product. We are not accepting any government subsidies or money for it. So Comcast is funding it ourselves. And I want to emphasize that the product we sell is one of our regular commercially available products. There's no special product that's inferior to a normal Comcast internet product. This is our bottom of the line product, but it is 3 megabits per second speed going down, which is adequate to watch a video, listen to music, or do commonly done tasks on the internet. It is enough. And the computers are netbooks, so they come preloaded with an antivirus software. It comes with free internet browser software and also basic word processing and spreadsheet software. And so we think it's enough to get people started. And for a family that has no internet access at home or no computer previously, this is a real big deal for that family.
Absolutely. Can you describe any successes that you've achieved with the program?
Oh, yes. We recently had a Fresno launch, and it was at the Mario Olmos Elementary School in Fresno. And a Latina mother got up and in Spanish gave a really heartfelt, tearful testimonial about the program. And what she said is that she has 2 children, one in, let's see, I think it was a freshman, and one who was in sixth grade who got the Internet Essentials program through Comcast. And she described how her high school child's grades jumped by a full grade after they got the program, and that that child, who was sort of ho-hum about school, suddenly became very engaged in school for the first time. And then as to the younger child, she said she didn't know, but her younger child was occasionally not showing up. And through the email connection with the teacher, she suddenly realized that her child wasn't always showing up. And she had a big sit down with that child, and the child now is showing up. You know, half of life is showing up, right? And that child's grades have improved. So it was really exciting to hear a real family telling the story of how it has changed.
And I bet that's just tip of the iceberg, right?
Oh, it is. There's no question. But we're just excited to be a part of it.
Linda Mandolini, the fearless leader of Eden Housing, which, in addition to providing affordable housing and supportive services in California, has been operating the Digital Connectors Technology and Leadership Program now for 8 years. So you built it. Comcast came to the table and is now expanding it. That's very, very exciting. Tell us, Linda, how Digital Connectors began and also how it's evolved.
So Eden, very much like the story that Luis told, had been looking across our properties through our programs and after school and seeing that our kids needed to access technology to do their homework. And in 1996, we did our first technological experiment. We built a computer room on site. At that time, only 12% of our residents could actually afford a computer in their home or had computers in their home. And so we said, well, if people can't get machines in every house, could we put 5 or 6 machines in a central location, have hours that are different from the library hours so people could access them, and give people the opportunity to use the computers? We didn't have a budget for them. We donated the computers from our own office into the computer room at Eden Palms because we were upgrading for our own office, and we said, all right, we'll just see what happens. We now manage 4,400 units of housing and 80 properties, and virtually every property where we have a space to have a computer room now has a computer room. It was wildly successful. The kids were using it every afternoon for their homework. And what we also saw is the adults were using the rooms to actually do their resumes. And at the time, the internet was not quite so widely available to all of us. And as that has evolved, the computer rooms have become essential. We run high-speed wireless centrally in our computer rooms. And we got approached by One Economy 8 years ago to do the Digital Connectors program, and we said, oh, this is terrific. And we were fortunate at the time that the Knight Foundation in San Jose was very interested in piloting the program in San Jose. So we had 6 kids who volunteered to do the program, and the program has a community leadership component. So they not only have to learn hardware and software, they actually have to volunteer in the community. And what we did with those kids is we said, your service hours are going to be volunteer in the community room, work with our residents, and teach them how to use technology. It was amazing what we saw. And we have a graduation at the end of the session, and we saw these six kids stand up and talk about how their world had been changed. How one of them, a girl, was afraid to use computers, but she had conquered that fear. And even though she wasn't going to major in computer science, she really was going to go on to do something with her life, and that technology was going to help her get to college. Since then, we've seen some of those kids go to medical school. 84 of them have graduated from high school. 73 of them are in college. Few weeks ago, one of them actually gave a speech at our scholarship ceremony. He is one of the youngest high school graduates. He's 16 years old. He's going to be a double major at Columbia this year in computer science and philosophy. He is an amazing kid, and he got up last week and he talked about how you cannot let your zip code be your destiny. And so we view the Digital Connectors program as a program that helps us help our kids and our families overcome their zip code. And we think that technology is really critical to that. We have had 350 kids in the program to date. Thanks very much to Comcast adopting that program so it could be bigger nationally, and also to our congressional delegation who's given us significant support, and Wells Fargo and several other foundations. We believe that where you live can change your life and that we have a role in that. Today, thanks to the work of technology and actually lowering the cost, programs like the Comcast program to bring technology into the homes have made a real difference. About 50% of our families now have computers in their homes. So the Connectors program for us has been a way to help families not just learn about technology, but help kids really excel in school, become community leaders, and really use technology to advance the advancement of the whole community, not just the 10 kids at the property that are in the program, but the whole property can participate in the Connectors program.
And it's not a closed loop, right? So some of their volunteer hours go toward teaching what they've learned to older residents.
Yeah, we just started this program called Generation Exchange. We have about 2,000 seniors that we house at Eden. And I don't know about you, but my parents are not wide users of the internet. They're not big adopters of technology. And there's a fear factor there with seniors around, you know, how do I turn on the computer? What do I do with it? I'm going to screw it up. And so we started looking at how could we help the seniors bridge that divide. And our goal with seniors is to help them age in place. Most of our seniors make about $12,000 a year on Social Security. They're fixed income. They're not wealthy. If they get too frail to live with us, they have to go to nursing homes. So our goal is to have them live independently for longer. And isolation is a key factor in their ability, or keeping them not isolated is a key factor in our ability to keep them independent. But also access to health and prevention information is very critical. And when you think about it, socialization happens on the internet. Facebook is a way to stay connected with your family and your friends. Kaiser, many of the health programs in California that our seniors access, all of their information is online. How do I prevent myself from falling down? You can find out about that online. How do I take my meds? That's online. And so we started thinking about, okay, could we work with our kids and with our seniors in computer rooms again, not necessarily in their homes, but get the kids to work with the seniors to teach them how to use the computer, you know, basics. How do you turn it on? How do you use Facebook? How do you send an email? How do you get an email account? Who can you interact with? We started this year with 5 sites. It's been enormously successful. The kids love it because they're learning from the seniors, and the seniors love it because they have these kids coming in with all this energy and excitement, and they're becoming friends. Some of them are going now, even after the first round of sessions are done, to talk to the seniors and take walks with them. And they're really creating a bond. And so for us, it's been much more successful than we had even imagined it would be.
Well, and, right. This is the gift that keeps on giving.
Exactly.
Right. Amazing. So lots of different directions in which to go. Luis, I'm going to turn back to you at this point. CETF has 5 different basic categories of strategic actions to close the digital divide and also promote digital inclusion. Can you give us an overview of what those 5 areas are?
Sure. Well, one of the most popular ones with us is our grant giving. And so in listening to both Rochelle and Linda talk, we're opening up a grant round of $5 million to get us to the ultimate goal for CETF, and that's to get to 80% broadband at home Currently, California stands at 73%. We're 7 points ahead of the nation, but we're also slowing down. So the population that's remaining is really the hardest to reach. And so in order to get to 80%, we know that it's going to take lots of different strategies. So our grant giving is one. And so that people want more information, they can go to our website at www.cetfund.org, and they can find out about how to submit a proposal. So that's one strategy. We've given out probably close to 50 different grants over the course of our now 5 years. We're looking at closing in 5 years. We're hoping to get our goal sooner than that. But that's been one of the key effective strategies. But we know that's not going to be enough. We're a $60 million fund. We're a big state. We got lots to do. So we're going to need to embark on a number of different key things, public policy being one. That's another key strategy. So we've initiated and supported a number of key policy initiatives. One in particular is the California Advanced Services Fund, promoting that, which is a $100 million fund to promote access in areas of the state where broadband does not exist. There's also now a California Broadband Council that did not exist, whose mission is to really be the leaders in the state to close the digital divide. And so that's a new entity that's came out of the public policy work. We're also looking at strategic partnerships. So we're embarking on a number of different key initiatives that are meant to spur broadband adoption. We're a major investor in the California Telehealth Network, which is now a network of over 400 clinics that are all connected through broadband in order to expand telehealth and telemedicine in both rural and medically underserved areas of the state. We also are embarking on leadership development. We've invested in a number of different regional leadership initiatives statewide as a way to make sure that leaders are working together instead of cross purposes. Broadband is a major infrastructure. We don't want sort of project here, project there, because we know if you just make the right investment, you could have connected 1,000 more homes. But if you stop short, it may be years before that those other homes are connected. So strategic partnerships is really key as well. And so there's lots that we do in addition to the grant making. And I thought I'd start with the grant making since it's really front of my mind. But I know for people who are interested in funds, that's a source to help get us to the 80.
Luis, we love success stories. And also, I find that's how we remember the impact of something is hearing how it affected a particular grantee. So is there anything you can share? Something where you've really been able to transform an opportunity for someone?
Sure. It's actually very much in line with our conversation about education and transformation. We were fortunate to get one of the stimulus grants on behalf. We have two grants on behalf of 19 different nonprofits statewide. And one of them has been working on in the Central Coast, the Chicana Latina Foundation, to start off by hitting one of the major barriers to broadband adoption, and that's not having a computer. So what they said is, if you make the connection, if you show us proof that you subscribe to a new broadband, we'll give you a computer. And so this young girl in Salinas saw the flyer, heard about it, and wrote a beautiful letter saying, how do I get this computer? I'm falling behind in my school. All the extracurricular and extra credit, extra credit in order to bring my grades up are all online. And when I go to the library, I get 20 minutes and then I have to cycle off, and I'm falling behind. I really need this computer. And so we got her the computer, and then we got a great note back from her and her mom. And similar to the story Rochelle told, is her grades went right up. And it was not that she's not intelligent. She just couldn't do the extra credit without this computer, without the connection.
No, it really handicaps kids at this point. It's like we said, it's essential.
And what we like about that story is that the mom also started to learn about how to use the computer. So it really is, it should be a family affair, because once parents know, because the parents have to make the investment, they need to know what's the value, not only for the child, but for themselves. So things like Skype can help them reduce some costs for long-distance calling cards that many low-income people use. they can just use, you know, a video cam or a webcam and reduce those costs. And especially to reduce isolation and connections, those type of services are critical. Having that face-to-face connection with the loved one. And we have a great story as well where families are being connected through Skype. You know, they travel from all over the world, you know, come here for a better living. And yet, you know, they haven't seen their child for 10, 15 years. And so the ability to use a webcam is just phenomenal.
Right. I just today started using a new app, WhatsApp, which allows me to text with my son, who happens to be in Costa Rica right now. But that's yet another kind of thing. It's just a free service, but you have to know about it and you have to have the access. So, Rochelle, is Comcast working on any specific initiatives at this point that would make it easier or more affordable for housing developers to incorporate broadband access in affordable housing developments, at least during the construction phase?
Typically, Comcast is approached by affordable housing developers to put broadband infrastructure into the project. And I talked with my vice president of engineering yesterday on this very question to ask him what our process was. And he said, well, there's no different process for an affordable housing unit than any other unit. What Comcast will do is they'll look at the whole project and make sure that the density levels are such that if we invest in putting the broadband infrastructure in place for the whole project, that we'll earn a return on investment in a reasonable period of time. And he assured me that as to affordable housing, the density is such that they always make the ROI formula work. So he said, he gave me an example that 5 years ago we did one in Antioch that has been very successful, and that he can't imagine a time where we would ever not do an affordable housing unit because it always pencils out.
Linda?
Well, I just want to add to that. I think what's exciting to me about the Internet Essentials program is that what we find is that we can put the broadband infrastructure into the unit, but it's really hard for people to spend $50 a month to pay for the service of getting internet access. And so to have a program where it's $10 a month and the computer is only $150, that really makes a big difference for us and for our residents.
And I wanted to say the early returns on the Internet Essentials actual customers who signed up right away, 80% of them already had a working computer at home. So it turns out they were folks that had it once and then couldn't afford it and had to go off. So that's the low-hanging fruit. So we're getting all those people on first because they don't have the steep cost of the computer. But now that we've been in business for a year with this Internet Essentials program, we have now found that it's getting a little tougher because now these are the families that don't have a computer at home. And so being able to afford $150 at once is very steep. So what Comcast has been doing is we've been partnering with some community-based organizations. So those might be the local YMCA, the Boys and Girls Club, the Rotary Club, the Elks Club, whoever. And they will do a fundraiser one night, you know, a spaghetti dinner type of thing. And they will raise $5,000, and then they will purchase in a bulk buy through Comcast the computers and then give them to the kids in the Internet Essentials program. And that has been really heartwarming to see the community step up to the plate to say, here's a problem. This is a great program. We're going to help with the computer side. It's been very exciting.
That's great. Rochelle, as a former FCC commissioner, can you talk about federal efforts the FCC might have or ways that they might be able to help encourage programs like Digital Connectors? For example, is it possible for funding from the Universal Services Program to go to programs like this?
Well, this is very exciting. Previously, there's a long-time program here in the U.S. called the Universal Service Fund. And what it essentially did for decades was to fund low-income families with discounts on basic phone service. It's called the Lifeline Fund. And then the other part of the fund helped rural telephone companies get subsidies so that they could build out telephone facilities to rural residents so that everybody could connect. You know, and the reason was, in case of an emergency, your telephone is how you call for the police or the fire department or an ambulance. So what's going on right now is the current Federal Communications Commission has realized that broadband is very important to people's lives, number one, you know, it's the way that you get government services now. And as Luis said, it's the way that you can apply for jobs. And Walmart, Comcast, we only allow job applications through website. So what the FCC has done is they are now opening a docket to relook at the current universal service rules, which are telephone-based, and to expand them to include broadband. So, for example, they're looking at how they ensure that there's enough wireless access to broadband, particularly in rural areas, because there are many rural areas still without wireless. And I believe they're going to focus first on communities and major freeways and highways on the infrastructure side. Then the second piece of the program is very interesting, too. It's focusing on broadband adoption, which is what Internet Essentials and CETF and EDEN are all working on today. So they are looking and have funded some pilot programs so far to bring broadband adoption to underserved communities. And by underserved communities, we mean Native American tribes, low-income, non-English-speaking, very rural communities. So they haven't set the final rules yet, but we are really encouraged that they are looking at these types of programs. Obviously, there are many that feel that these kind of programs need to be very cost efficient. They need to show real results. And I'm sure that the FCC will take the learnings from pilot programs, including Internet Essentials, and apply them towards some forward-looking programs to work on this digital divide issue.
Luis?
Well, what's exciting about the potential for the Lifeline program and an affordable Lifeline rate for broadband is that it can reach seniors and adults without kids. So while we have a great program in Internet Essentials, which is going to be expanding to other cable providers sometime in early 2013, you have to have a kid in school. So what do you do if you don't have a kid in school or if you're a senior? And what do you do? And so what we're excited about is that that subsidy we hope will reach that target population, which we know is still not connected. In California, 63% of households led by a person 55 or older have broadband. So 10 percentage points the state for those older households. And the older you get, probably the least connected you're going to be. So having a rate of, let's say, $9.95 for broadband would be phenomenal.
Luis, if you had a policy wish list that would help bring broadband to unserved and underserved communities, what would you put on that list?
Well, I think the Lifeline rate would be great. I mean, that would certainly go a long, long way. Another one that we've just now started to work on is to make sure that there's a good pipeline of refurbishers and refurbishing organizations to get those older laptops or older desktops into the hands of low-income households. We know that, you know, businesses and individuals, you know, once every 2 or 3 years kind of cycle out and they just dump them at the local e-waste. But you don't really know what happens after that. We are fortunate here in the Bay Area to have some great recyclers who then will take that technology, use what they can, but more importantly, get it into the hands of kids in schools. There's an organization in Oakland called OTX West that does a great job. A group called Reliotech that's based in San Pablo. In Richmond, that does a phenomenal job of that, getting computers down to about $150 for a laptop, which is great. I mean, if that's an affordable rate, then that's you know, an amazing price reduction from what you're going to get at a Best Buy or a Costco.
Sure, Rochelle, are there specific policy initiatives that Comcast is working on that could help low-income communities have better access to technology?
Well, sure. We have our Digital Connectors program, which we focus in affordable housing communities, low-income communities, and non-English-speaking communities, SF Chinatown, just as an example. The other thing that we're doing is we're very active in bringing free video service to schools through our Cable in the Classroom program. You know, finally, this Internet Essentials program, it's a very exciting program for the company. It's probably the most important civic thing we have done ever in the history of Comcast. So we are aggressively looking at how do we expand the program to incorporate new communities that also need internet access but don't have it now. So I don't have anything to announce today, but I know we're very aggressively looking at it at the corporate headquarters in Philadelphia, and we're hoping soon to have some news.
And to any of you, are there any important bills on the horizon right now for California in this area?
Well, an important bill that we had recently was a digital books bill that just went through the California legislature. It allows open source digital books to be used in California classrooms. Now, one might think that's not a huge big deal, but it turns out books is a very large expenditure for schools. And if you have instead an inexpensive digital tablet device, so perhaps a Kindle-like device, you can save a lot of money on books. Also, books go out of, they become obsolete fairly fast, right, with all the scientific advances that we're making these days in history. So it turns out that by having digital book subscriptions, you have better books because they're more up to date. They're less dog-eared. You don't have, you know, the prior guy writing stuff in the margins. And so the kids really like it. So
is a significant percentage open sourced at this point?
No, and that's the point, is very little is. So this law will make sure that the schools are allowed to use their budgets in this way and make a convergence. And, you know, we're excited about it because it means that the schools will have money to invest in more devices such as tablets or netbooks or PCs so that the kids can have them and move around the school. We also think that that will help with this digital divide at home. The devices may or may not be allowed to go home depending on the school policy. But I was very excited about that. I thought it was a big step forward, and we're hoping other states will follow.
Great. Linda, what's on your policy wish list for these programs?
You know, I have Lifeline on my list as well, largely because we think that it has real potential to help us with programs like Digital Connectors and Generation Exchange, where we're really trying to bring higher quality access into people's homes. And I think there's real potential there. The other wish list I have, and I think the current administration has done a good job of trying to encourage different silos of government to start working together to solve a problem. And housing is a particularly good platform to solve for education and health and some other issues. And I think the Digital Connectors has really proven that you can work across different lines of government and issues in government to come up with a program that can make a real difference. And because we're an affordable housing provider and we're regulated like every other entity that uses federal funds, we know how much money our people make. So we know which ones of our kids are having free lunch in the school. So we know that we have eligible children. We know that we can be a good conduit for programs like Internet Essentials. And so I think we've seen a lot of work with the Department of Education and the Department of Health and HUD to work together to bring all these programs to bear in the same location. And we think housing is a really good platform to help solve for some of this. And there's, you know, 15,000 affordable housing units a year are built in California with the tax credit program, which is a federal program. And all of those developers bring broadband access to every unit. They don't necessarily bring a computer to every unit. And so I think we in the housing field really think that we can help solve for this big problem. So I would like to see public policy encourage that. I would like to see when the feds do demonstration programs that it's the digital connector kinds of programs that they encourage to happen. Because I think we who care a lot about the success of our residents and our communities can really help be a good conduit for that.
Luis?
I think I would agree with that. I think there's the program is really incomplete unless you have the grassroots organizations organized and mobilized and to make that connection and to help those individuals connect. But in addition to that, it really is a huge partnership that needs to happen both on the private side, in Rochelle's examples, additional foundations and their support. So whenever they fund education or healthcare, whatever their interests are, that they really be thinking about technology and the digital divide and join CETF and others in being a part of that. And it doesn't take that much, but it really is just being focused and asking the right questions. And then on the individual side, all of us probably know a family or a senior or somebody who's disconnected. So how can you, either if you need to have an old computer, say, let me help set you up. Let me help, you know, make that call for you. Let me call AT&T or Comcast or any of the number of providers in the area and help them make that call. Because oftentimes they feel intimidated when they make that call that they're going to get upsell. They're going to, you know, they don't know what megabits are or how many megabits do I really need. And they feel like they're intimidated and they hang up and there goes that. But if you really can help somebody, you know, make that connection, it really makes a huge difference. I know that was my role as the good son, getting my mom connected and helping her make that call. And whenever we are on video cam together, I know that it was the right thing to do.
Rochelle?
You know, I want to do a shameless plug at the end for the Internet Essentials program because we've talked about it so much. So if you know of an eligible family that lives in a Comcast service area that is currently not a Comcast Internet subscriber and has at least one child on free or reduced lunch, please have them call 1-855-846-8376. That's 1-855-846-8376 to see whether they qualify for our Internet Essentials program. You can also find out more information on our website, www.internetessentials.com. If you speak Spanish, we have a Spanish-only phone number, 1-855-765-6995. Again, 1-855-765-6995. And our Spanish language website is internetbasico.com. Internetbasico.com. I appreciate letting me put that out there.
Absolutely. And we want to just wrap up by saying what our listeners can do to help close the digital divide. Luis?
Well, as I mentioned, they can... Whenever they're in conversation or they know somebody who is low income or elderly or disabled, because that's another key population that needs help, find out what their needs are. Do they need a modem? Do they need, as I mentioned, just making that call? Do they want to just try it out? And that makes a huge difference in getting people over that hump, is just sitting down with a desktop or a laptop or even an iPad and seeing what it does. Because that's what we're finding out is for the people, many of the people who are not connected don't know what being connected means.
They're not yet connected.
That's right. Right. So being able to demo it, help, or just providing that flyer that they get in the mail or they got in at their kid's school, they may not need it, but they can hand it off to another family. So helping somebody is really what somebody can do.
And your website, once again, is cetfund.org.
Correct.
Great. Anything to add?
Yeah, I was just going to add, I think you could volunteer. There are many groups. You know, Eden partners with the Boys and Girls Clubs. We do a lot of direct after school and technology work. You know, we're always looking for people who have computer skills to come in and help us teach our kids and our residents how to advance those skills. So, a lot of us upgrade our computers regularly. Think about sending them to one of the recycling places that Luis is talking about, because just because it is not new to you doesn't mean it can't be used by somebody else. And I think it's really important for folks who have that barrier, for whom $150 is a huge amount of money to be able to buy a computer, to have a way to access the hardware. So I would encourage that.
Great. I want to thank you all so much for your insights today and also for the work that you do every day. This is really important and it's making a substantial difference in our world. Our guests once again, Luis Arteaga, Director of Emerging Markets for California Emerging Technology Fund, CETfund.org. Rochelle Chong, Regional Vice President of Government Affairs for Comcast's California region. Thank you. And Linda Mandolini, President of Eden Housing. I'm Joanne Green. For more on the Affordable Housing Podcast, please visit www.edenhousing.org.
SmarterPodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.